Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we did some good howling last week with John Perlin, which was quite effective. And thank you all who donated to this station, this show, and our way of meeting here. So it is the waxing full moon. More howling. Opening the Dakini portals, we will explain. So I welcome longtime ally with whom we have not cahooted in a while, but I have letters from her in 2001. Okay, anyway, there we go. So we welcome Janet Inglis, practitioner of Chode. She will explain. Dedicated to tracking the wrathful and peaceful Dakinis back to their original liberating impulse before Tibetan Buddhist orthodoxy made them pretty, because they're not pretty, they're beautiful, woofy, part woman, part animal, original party animal, as I quip, and offers them, this is Janet, through her craft. Remember, our wonderful Max Dash, who says craft means power from dedication. So Janet offers them through her craft a portal through which they may enter the world at this full moon, at this time of dire beauty, where we welcome all help to transmute poison and toxin into tonic. You know, what did this want to be before it got bamboozled by taming orthodoxy? Remember, ortho means straight, like orthodontist, and doxy is teaching, straight teaching. We like our teaching curvy, excuse me, and undulating. Thank you. So Janet's syncretizing science, art, and spirit. She spirals forth manuscripts, thousands of paintings, heretical tankas. We love heresy. Remember, it was a term of praise in early religion. Sculptures that travel an increasingly welcome world. Her website is janetinglis.com, JanetInglis.com, and Instagram is Inglis, Inglis Gallery. Welcome. Welcome, Janet.
Welcome to you and all this world that's around us today. I cannot believe we are here today together. How fun.
How fun. And I've excavated your chart, of course. We are here to give Capricorn Rising a better name. we share that. But I also have kept and treasured, you know, the email you sent me in 2001. Just for the fun of it, you said, I know you from the death rite circles of other times and places. I'm so glad to see you again and doing such awesome work. It's very encouraging to know that you're a teammate this time, too. And then you say you're still doing death projects among somewhat tamer things that syncretize art, science, and spirituality, a long-term dedication, and other very fun things that you wrote that I treasure. So, thank you.
Well, thank you. I treasured our time together in Santa Fe when we met, and we worked with the Dakinis then. And it was most exceptionally medicinal and soothing and irritating and fabulous. All at the same time.
Yes.
I do
all
remember
at the same time.
It was marvelous.
No, and I love how everything, well, we're in this synchronous web, right? And we spoke a little backstage about, you know, wondering and augury call and response. So I had new friend, you know, or medium new friend, Sanjeev, at my house, and he was transfixed by the Dakini Tankas you had done for me back in 2001. They are wild, a raven Dakini and a coyote Dakini, which was so, well, it's, you know, anyway, his admiring it brought it alive, like your paintings are, like, and I go, oh my goodness, Coyote Dakini, you've been too much in the shadows, let me bring you out so I can see her every day now. And that was like, I should get in touch with Janet, and here we are. So the art is alive.
Fantastic, right? Well, that's what Dakinis do. They wait patiently until we're ready, and that's the mystery of the fun of it, because you never know when they're going to show up in your life.
Right.
It's whether it's a raven that shoots right across your windshield and makes it in time, you know, that kind of thing. It's always such a marvelous introduction to a world that I knew not a single thing about until I was taught some marvelous things in Santa Fe. By a wonderful Buddhist teacher. Yes.
You mean Sultram?
I do mean Sultram, yes. Who is now
Yes, we...
Lama Sultram, yes.
Right, and she was part of the Council of Unreasonable Women that was convened in Ojai, that included fantastic people, Diane Wilson, and you know, and the founding of Code Pink and everything. And so we're all, well, the confluencing of allies, right? It's like hello,
Sure.
And just because everything, you know, I'd mentioned that the rising sign for this show, and we want to honor the full moon and all that you want to say. But the rising sign for us all now is particularly about honoring grief, you know, in the micro and macro. And just a little shout out to my friend McCarty Baker, whose cat, Miss Pete, her companion of 20 years, has just gone off into spirit world. But again, she just texted me that, you know, there are four crows standing silently gazing at the house. And I go, I love that.
Love that. And there are other dakinis right there.
Yeah, that's right.
Right there.
The crows. Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah.
I love
yeah,
that.
So the crow, yeah, I do love that. Well, it's heartening because it's like, hello, is these mysteries of death that you stir the cauldron of, you know, and it's like, oh, the crows showing up, or the escorts, and it's like, right. Well, because you did, and I do want to honor, you know, that when you did say, I know you from the death circles of other times and places, I'm like, that's great. I don't know if that's true, but it feels right, and I can ride it, right? So.
Excuse me, what I meant by that, very audacious thing to say.
It's a great
thing.
I
just met you. For that, I do apologize, but apparently it was meaningful. Caroline. The death circles. What you know? What the chud practice is really about, and what dakinis are really about, are helping us understand what our fears really about, and what our anger is really about, and what aggression we have. What that's really about. So, when you talk about a liberating impulse, I adore that because that's exactly what is trying to happen here is to help us face our fear and on a root level and become more whole, not to eradicate. That's not the Tibetan Buddhist way of the wrathful dakini. It's not to eradicate fear. Oh, I'm going to get over my fears. Not so much. More about becoming intimate with our fears. And that's where I love talking about grief, Caroline, because, you know, being intimate with grief as opposed to being afraid of it or pushing it away or denying it are all things that humans do, that we do it because we're human. Perhaps with it, especially in this time when we really ought to have, I think, I do feel this way, I need to have a much more intimate relationship with grief. Just lost both parents, and being a genius autistic, I am 100% permeable. So I'm 100% aware of the fact that my dark matter is being drained into the Ukraine and the trauma there, for instance. You see, I understand time that way and space and math. And I just think grief is the most magnificent topic because Where do we become most creative? But when we're most scared, we're most fearful, and we're most sad, something comes out of us. And I believe that these practices that I do certainly help me with all of that. And I know they help others. So I'm told.
No, that's great. So let's stay with this, right? You know, and what I'd said to you is, you know, working with it. Well, because somebody had said, well, how does Trickster, my great dedication, how does Trickster process grief? And I go, well, first we dissolve the word process, right? Because cheese is processed and it's terrible. you know, and I go, I think of it, you know, well, we want to be metaphorically fluid, which is part of the great rich, you know, metaphors that you manifest and bring to us, you know, that, so right now I think of grief as a river, you know, it never ends, but we go along with it. It's undulating, and that at its core, grief really is love. Hence, you know, the things I've been chewing on, working on too, which is, it's the antidote of grievance, right? Grievance really obstructs grief. Grievance is like, nah, nah, nah. It's outsourced authority. It's the avoidance of the thing. And something where we catch ourselves, right? I had found myself annoyed at NPO groups and whatnot at how people were fending off wonder. But then I got myself. I go, oh, Caroline, you're fending off wonder by minding other people fending off wonder. anyway, so it is. It's like, oh, I got myself. That's right. There we go. but back to the grief and the navigating the grief and, you know, your beautiful work. And we have a beautiful song to bring in at some point, just a short song, The Poem of the Atoms from Baba Aziz, the prince who contemplated his soul. Because so many cultures, and I'll turn back to you and what you love. But, you know, it's like Martin Prechtel, when he came back to this country after 26 years in Guatemala, said he'd forgotten that Americans know nothing about grief. And he said, for lack of grief, wow, we go to war. And there has been grief. The Vietnam Memorial is a living place, but the grief has been kidnapped by Dementors, right? And then your deep work, you know, however, whatever you want to bring forward about grief as honoring and the, you know, the little I know, you know, from you and also Miranda Shaw, Passionate Enlightenment, book on the Dakinis, which I like, and like her. I don't know if she's still breathing. Hello out there if you are, or even if you're not. But how is that, you know, grief is not to be metabolized, it's not a poison, right? Grief is to be
right.
Well, how do you guide working with grief?
Well, if I can tell a story about the chud, it might shed some light. I wonder if it might, because that's a great question that you have there. So if we take ourselves back pre-Western influence in Mongolia, where the bone tradition was practiced and the whole entire area there, so chud was taught in schools, and there was much practice of it. And there were men and women who were what's called for a man is a chud pa, and a woman is a chud ma. So they would work in groups and then become facile enough at their skill that there would be let out, that will go venture forth into reality, this other reality, not the one you've been in this marvelous school, and go and deal with famine and drought and disease, and go to all the charnel grounds you can find and practice the chud. Practice, 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 and expect nothing, and you will receive everything. And so there they would go off of their little bands of chudmas and chudpas, and here, there, and wherever. And I keep thinking of the notion of the charnel ground, where the relationship to the human body, in just stay right with that arena, would have to be entirely different than how we sacralize the body after it's dead. Instead, they lived a sacralized life of their bodies and just chuck the body, chop it up on the charnel hill, so that the animals and nature and the primordial can refeed. And that's it. And then the chudmas and the chudpas come and they do their chud, and they work with the hungry ghosts that remain around the charnel ground. And then they go to the next one. The scary places where the chudmas and chudpas are told to go, that need much, help with fear. And fear, of course, manifesting as anger and grief, as a kind of anger instead of a kind of acceptance. So I find an interesting overlay there, Caroline. I wonder if you do too.
If I do, what?
I wonder if you see an overlay there in terms of the relationship to human bodies, and how we sacralize them for death here in this culture instead of while we're living. And then we turn this big old grief industry into this, what it is. And we don't know about grief because we don't have a relationship with our bodies that is realistic, really,
right.
I guess. I wonder if that's the right way to look at it. It's, you know, it's
I'm not
Christianity
sure.
thing. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we and also I like you saying the grief industry. It's really sort of more a grievance industry to
exactly.
as opposed to actual grief, which is an expression
exactly.
of love.
Yeah,
I remember when my mom died, and it was a pretty conventional funeral home. But one of the most wonderful people in my life, Nettie Lockhart, who was this wonderful black gospel singer who worked for my family making wonderful food, and she entered dancing. And she's like, hallelujah, she's gone home. And everybody shushed her, right? And it's like, no, we love that. Here, Nettie, let's go, you and I go outside. The celebration, you know, and the black gospel spiritual church of that, you know, and, you know, some fine morning, I'll fly away, oh Lordy, you know, is such a beautiful song. So it's not exactly responding to your how do we sacralize the body, you know, after it's dead. But there was humor because, you know, I was saying, do we really need to do embalming? And the funeral guy was saying, we're not talking King Tut here. But so we do want the play and the gravedigger's humor and all of those things there. But yes, let's return, and you can ask me anything, and I may not know the answer at all, but return to feeding hungry ghosts, because
yeah.
we were speaking of this and your ongoing aspiration to do chod, and you may want to explain a little more about what that is, in Washington, D.C., to feed the hungry ghosts. And I go, I'm not sure what this is, but I know it's a great idea. So more about feeding hungry ghosts, cleaning. You said chode, sometimes it's a 20-minute drumming, but anything you want to say?
Yes. Well, Caroline, it's popularly pronounced in this country as chode. So it's like could with the CH. Oh. I could do this or I could do that. It's chode, I could do this, right? Like that.
So thank you.
Chode.
Yes.
And again, I love your term, liberating impulse. The impulse to do chud is to feed hungry ghosts. Mm-hmm. And the practitioner's only real job is to stabilize the visualization of this ancient practice. We don't need special clothing or accoutrement, et cetera, et cetera. All we need is a bell and a drum.
Hmm.
And we need to, bring all of our fear and all of our nonsense right to the table and then have it transmuted through the vibration, the words that are chanted in Tibetan. And it literally is, it's a transmutation by through resonance because, the actual translation of the Tibetan doesn't go directly to English. To translate it, we had I used other translations and made them slightly more artful to the tongue. Reading it in English, because I always read it in English after I practice it in Tibetan. In any event, meaning only being made more rich, it's so important that but the main purpose of us doing this, saying these words and drumming the bell and doing it all in proper rhythm so that it creates this vibration where we thereby, as a practitioner, release our attachment to our physical body and we do this whole symbolic ritual of offering up our skull cup, which is a symbolic of our essence. And we offer it up with our amrita, which is our essence, in the skull cup for to be consumed. And it's none of our concern how it's consumed by, there's no second party watching over the procedure. It's just the practitioner, Janet, as Vajrayogini, up above myself. and stabilizing that visualization. That's all I'm doing. So then the magic happens.
I just wanted to clarify. The skull cup and the Amrita in the skull cup. All right, we drink that. What is that? What does that mean?
No. We don't drink it, dear. Like? We just visualize that it's there, and it's on a little tripod, and it just flame underneath, and it's burning like crazy, and we offer it to hungry ghost feed. We don't have any part in it. It's just there for whatever or whomever, however they show up there. That's their deal. And it's not so, for us to pay attention to it or see it. There's no seeing of it.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Almost. Because I know you've welcomed working in graveyards, and so we're offering the Amrita in the skull cup to the hungry ghosts. I'm magnetized by your desire to do this in Washington, D.C., and think of everywhere, too. So there's a lot of hungry ghosts, right? And that's even, you know, in the former guy as an embodiment of, you know, again, it's the book about him by his niece, Too Much and Never Enough, which is the definition of a hungry ghost, right? Too much and never enough, right?
Right.
I will eat forests and eat everything and nothing will be enough. Is that how we're thinking of the political realm of hungry ghosts?
I couldn't possibly say.
Oh, okay. All right, well.
No, I'm teasing you. You know, I definitely think there's just so much work to be done. And again, you know, we don't really have to design who it's for. We're not supposed to. We just go and do it. And the business of the practice is practicing. It's not just the one-shot deal. You just keep going back and back and back. There's a place, for instance, here where I live, Carolina, in the Shenandoah Valley, in the town where I live, there is an enormous monument and tomb to, I believe it is 1,800 differently identified as individuals, body parts from the Civil War in Gettysburg, both Union and Confederate. So it is literally a charnel ground. It is body parts. I could not believe what I saw when I first read that. I thought, oh, no wonder I moved here. Perfect.
To help us here to see. Mm, okay.
Yeah, no intent whatsoever other than to embody the... what I've been asked to do with the visualization, and that's only to be in the body of the Vajrayogini. She's in primordial space. So I'm seriously not in charge other than the bell and the drum and the words. And the cadence is important too, because again, that's resonance. It's a very cool thing.
Okay, in accord with the astro mythology of now, for fun, are we thinking of it also as opening portals? Are we thinking of it as
absolutely.
Opening portals?
Absolutely.
Oh, thank goodness.
Absolutely. And you know, they're so feeding hungry ghosts. You know? Mm-hmm. Look at our history. It's not so very long, and there's so many hungry ghosts.
Right. And then just to tease it into...
Rutabaga.
Thank you. Rutabaga. Right, it's our secret code word, although we're doing very, very, very well. Let me just proffer just to tease it back and forth into our immediate availability, just entertain the possibility, oh, dedicated listening team. You know, quintiles, 72-degree angles are abounding in our chart for today, and the full moon, the waxing full moon, 8:41 p.m. on Saturday for West Coast people. And quintiles, you know, are irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love and the capacity to open portals between worlds and dimensions, says my friend Sylvia Hanley. Hi there. So I love that. And whose generous proffering we can gratefully honor and animate. And what I said to you, Janet, you know, again backstage is, a traveling companion for the last couple of weeks for all of us, just to entertain this possibility, is Saturn, you know, inhaling our Saturn, our authority, our capacity to define things, not outsourcing to sociopathic dingbats who want to destroy the world and build pipelines in the Appalachians. All right, we'll get to that. Saturn quintiles Uranus, which says our dedication is our freedom, and our inward dedication magnetizes the serendipitous synchronicity to make it happen. So that's just a party favor for everybody, right? I mean, just to put that out there. And then back to you, you know, the perfection of us cahooting right now is, yeah, so your practice, can we say, your part of your practice is to open those portals?
I am in complete service to that activity, whatever that means.
Excellent.
And that is, I my root is the primordial feminine. The primordial feminine exists in the phenomenal world here in nature, and I am just committed to unveiling nature's, I feel, very high ministry of service. And we just cut it all down, or we just put piles of plastic on top of it, or what? Don't get me I won't start.
Well, so we're going to start after the
route.
The break, but
we have
some antidotes. We're brewing some antidotes. So
excellent.
Yes. Yeah, the mowing things down, the grief that we do feel, and then how
yes.
we can act on that love and
our service?
And right.
So yeah.
So we will get you started. Because there's also, you know, honoring grief and a beautiful article that I'll be posting, I guess, on Facebook and posting on coyotenetworknews.com connected to this radio show. Beautiful article on how to mourn a forest. The Marin people of West Papua deploy mourning not only to grieve their animal and plant kin, but as political resistance. It's a beautiful article. We'll be honoring some of that and tossing it back to Janet Inglis, our guest for this hour, and our re-cahooting as well. And then, you know, in a few minutes, we'll have a very short usual break music. And then when we come back, we have beautiful grieving kinship little musical piece, but also dive into, you know, honoring grief and your capacity, your dedication to opening portals for, well, how do you put it to yourself? To the Sun quintiles Neptune now, which, as I said, the metaphors, the mythology, the mythological beings are especially eager to be invited into the world now, and that's right up your alley, right?
It is, and that is the alley that the Chit practice and the Dakinis play their games and have their parties and do their work, whether we want them to or not, is exactly where they are.
Well, not so fast, young lady. What do you mean? What do you mean, whether we want them to or not?
Oh, because sometimes we don't know what they're doing. So, if I said we want them to or not, that's not what I meant. Whether we knew what they were doing or not, I think that's what I mentioned in the beginning. Is the for me, the mischief of it all is very intriguing, and I really love the notion of dealing with fear. And certainly my fear turns into all various sorts of grief because I'm a Scorpio, and that's what Scorpios like to do. So I really look forward to continuing our conversation here.
We are. We're going to continue it right on the other side of our wonderful usual Taj Mahal, All Praise Be Upon Him, short break music. Our perfect for now guest is Janet Inglis, practitioner of Chud, right, dedicated to tracking the wrathful and peaceful Dakinis back to their original liberating impulse before they got tamed. And for all of us, right, let's track ourselves back to our original liberating impulse before we got tamed or conditioned or colonized or grumpy. And so her website is JenetInglis.com, JenetInglis.com. And we'll be right back after this very short break.
shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our guest this hour is long time, from the burning guts, from the whatever, Janet Inglis, practitioner of Chud. Thank you. Thank you for that. And we are honoring the wrathful and peaceful Dakinis and the practice of feeding hungry ghosts and grief and many crucial things. But I you know, you said don't get me started on it. Well, I do want to get you started, and all of us too, just to tease all of us into practicality. So the debt ceiling, and one we say a always useless, now especially useless, metaphor, you know, and I like, you know, replacing the metaphor with the altar of accountability, or as other practical political people say, going, just pay your bills. That's really all it is. And the complexity and poignancy. And Tim Kaine, Senator from Virginia, one of your guys, you know, pretty good, you know, is introducing an amendment about the horrific inclusion of the Mountain Valley Pipeline, greenlighting that in Appalachia. And it really is a very sad, sad thing. I know people, and I think you do too, Janet, who've been working effectively to prevent this atrocity over the hills and down the thing. And as Tim Kaine says, this will take land from the very poorest people for whom all they have is land, sometimes generations, right? Sometimes generations it's their land. And Tim Kaine said, you know, this is no normal, it exempts them from no normal permitting things and exempts them from courts. He says it's a terrible and dangerous precedent for all of us. And it is privilege. Remember, the word privilege comes from prive lege. It means private law. And we go, right, it's a horrible thing. And he said, you know, it's completely irrelevant. How did it get, you know, slid into this thing? And there's other, you know, cruelties, and we honor Barbara Lee, wonderful, wonderful, with her complexity going, all right, Biden did what he could, you know, and we kind of back that up, and let's do what we can, you know. So I just wanted to bring in the grief of the forests as well, because that's, are you Appalachia? Are your Virginia, the James River, Blue Ridge?
There is absolute work going to be done here in, where we are in Virginia, which is on the western side of the state in the Shenandoah Valley. So the Appalachian Mountains turned into the Allegheny Mountains, right? So it's a long path up, and there's no clear designation for individuals. There is on a map, you know, where the Alleghenies and the Appalachians technically start, but it's all the same area. Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And so, you know, we again do what we can, and we invite in mythic forces of nature to do what we can't, but they can, you know, to, you know, again, where it's confounding and to dissolve this. But Tim Kaine is presenting his amendment to be voted on to prevent this, which would be really good. And the annoying mainstream news person, Alex Wagner, was sort of scolding him, going, now, you know, and thank you for your thoughts, she said condescendingly, but you know, every vote's important, goodbye, as she dismissed him. I'm like, oh, that's not your job. You just, anyway. But we compost our conniption fits too, right? Right? Are you good at that?
Right. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, no, but we compost conniption fits. That's good. And then, you know, is there I mean, I like saying, you know, let all mythic figures be understood as metaphoric animations of intelligence in nature. And my not as deep, not as dedicated, not as primary as yourself understanding of the Dakinis, or how I've thought of them, is the wrathful Dakinis represent that in nature which metabolizes poison. Is that fair enough?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And, so, and where, how it happens is inside of us.
Uh-huh.
If the poisons are in us. The Dakinis work on an interior level. Yes, a Dakini can be a manifestation of a physical manifestation, can be that raven that you see, or the four, right, that you mentioned, crows. Mm. But also the work is done inside of us, and that's where this wonderful component you've brought in about grief and fear that I'm bringing to the table with the chud. It's just... it's so potent with healing. Those poisons can be turned into a tonic, as you said, and they must be for us, or we will be devoured by, you know, the badness.
Right.
So for
right.
me,
well,
I do that. Go ahead, please.
No. Yes, all of those things, and to invite things into the world, and then there's this beautiful article, "How to Mourn a Forest,"
yes.
which I'll be posting on Coyote Network News underneath this show with Janet, because it's beautiful and powerful and restoring sacred, and then I just have to say, because we keep in training, in the comments section, someone said about this beautiful article. And traditional practices of honoring all our kin and all the creatures and honoring their death. And the comment guy said, "It's so endearing when we pretend we can learn anything from these ancient practices, the myth of the good savage all over again. We can't go back in time, folks, only forward with rationality and science and wisdom." So I responded and wrote, deft self-satire of presumptive dingbattery and compensatory condescension, ignorant forsaking of actual rationality and science and wisdom, and embodiment of what got us all into this irrational, speciesist, hyper-yang death frenzy. Well done. Anyway, I was happy with that response. Just cooking it away. Anyway, so it's like Dorothy Parker says, every morning I get up and I brush my teeth and sharpen my tongue. So there's that. Because there is, the thing also about the Dakinis, and certainly how you express them, is they're not sentimental, right?
No.
I learned from Stella Coyote the difference between sentimentality and grief, right? And the Dakinis are really not sentimental. Yeah?
No, they're fierce.
Right.
And they're fierce because I do believe that it's crazy. How would I say? I wonder if the reason that they appear to be so scary is because they need to wake us up. We need to be woken and become much more intimate with these issues you're talking about, this grief business. We don't do that well. And so I think that's why maybe they look so odd and scary, like you're saying, a part woman, part animal. I think it's a good thing that they're scary.
But the ones that you did for me, and maybe you're still doing them, and they're traveling out into the world, but they're outrageous.
They are.
But in an irresistible way. So I don't find them exactly scary, although they are trampling on the corpses of our old dead selves. Well, there is that part, yeah. And that's why I've moved it into prominence, so that I greet the Dakinis that you created, you know, every morning going, oh, that's great, because it's so full of energetic blessing. And my friend coming over and going, what's that? Also brought it alive, right? Because, and as we're doing, and as you're doing always, and, you know, and you're at a particularly coming alive time. Uranus is opposite your sun at 18 Scorpio. Yeah, so it's all a coming alive, and your fierce compassion. You know, you are doing a splendid job of your fierce. Well, let's put this on the altar of desirable mystery, because I think what you have and what you hum in others is one of the best medicines in the world, which is to see everything deeply just how sketchy and corrupt and horrible it is, you know, just everything, and to love it anyway. And as you say, find it in ourselves, yeah?
Yes, Caroline. And, you know, I'm going to tie this right back to your altar of accountability, which I love that vision, because we ourselves, we are accountable to ourselves, to our emotional growth and our spiritual serenity, and that bringing us the power we need to take the fierce action in the world. But we're accountable to that. And that's where you're speaking again, right around the corner to your grief ideas here. Someone told me that, right after my first medicine dog, she was a service dog, but she was a true medicine dog, she dropped her body. And I thought we had such a powerful, she was a familiar, so in all those ways. It's such a powerful psychic connection that I thought I was just cleaved in two and would never repair. And my friend knew me well enough to say to me, and she knew I was listening, because she is still a woman of very few words. She said to me, "The grief you feel, Janet, is in direct proportion to the love you shared." And that just stopped my selfish, self-centered, preference-oriented grief. Wanted, well, if they died, and I wanted, oh, I so wanted to clear that up, or I wanted to do this. No, no, no. What she brought me to was that the grief that I felt in losing my dear Zena. You met Zena, did you not?
I did. Yes.
You did meet Zena, yes. Because she very carefully cleansed your toes at one point.
We loved all these services, reciprocal blessings. But yeah,
and event,
I think what
please.
But what you also carry is, it's like when I had terrible sad loss, baby died, and I thought, oh, I'll never feel anything as deeply again. But then, you know, here comes yourself and your practice. It's like, oh, no, I'll feel everything more deeply, right? So the grief opens us to all grief, right? I mean, and which is kinship. And then in keeping with that, I just have this short piece of music. It's just 4 minutes, but I find it so wonderful. And before we head into it, it's called Poem of the Atoms, you know. And I find that this music, this yearning, and your syncretizing of Tibet, and I bring Middle Eastern Sufi into it just for the moment, is that while people listen to this, short, just 4 minutes, but really worthy, we can think of doors opening, you know, portals opening between worlds. And if there's any visualization you'd like to give us as we head into this music now or on the other side, either way.
Certainly. Yes.
Okay.
Certainly. Yes. So imagine yourself in the center of a ring of five, yourself being the fifth, the Dakinis. You're the center. And then around you are dancing 16 Dakinis that are about half your size. And they are doing the whirly gig in the world. You got you in the center are part of the primordial feminine. Your ring around you, the 16 Dakinis, they're part of the world. And you have four protectors in the four directions. And they are holding everything all together with their fierce service.
Ah.
But you can embody grief and fear and anger and aggression and know that your mind is a diamond and you know the way out.
Beautiful. So here we go with this short reverie, all dedicated listeners and ourselves here, you know, to feel the proffering of Janet's imagery. And here comes from Amanda Marr and from this most fantastic movie, Bab Aziz, The Prince Who Contemplated His Soul, Poem of the Atoms. Here we go.
Beirut. چرخ و هوا رقص کنند، جان ها ز خوشی بی سر و پا رقص کنند. در گوش تو گویم که کجا رقص کنند. هر ذره که در هوا هر ذره اگر خوش است اگر محزون است، سرگشته خورشید خوش
Thank you, team. That is Armand Amer, Palm of the Atoms, from the wonderful movie Bob Aziz. And our guest this hour is Janet Inglis, you know, bringing much, much, much from many, many traditions that we all work on ourselves, but especially the Wrathful Dakinis. But that music, you hear Persia meet Tibet, right, so moves me because it so feels like truly we're all in this dream together. It's like, yeah, and all grief is shared grief anyway, so I feel that way. Are you still there?
I am, Caroline. Good. It was beautiful what you said, and beautiful, yeah. Music, just extraordinary. I just was overwhelmed with waves of compassion.
Yes. Yes.
In the timbre of his voice, it was just beautiful. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful, yeah. and it's such yearning aspiration, yeah. Like, oh, too much, yeah. And so, you know, distinct, mm-hmm. and unique, but kinned with all to which you are dedicated, you know, and it's a great movie, but and it does always, you know, move me, going, we are, you know, all, you know, mothers and children, all people who've suffered grief, all who love their animals, all whose forests have been struck low, you know, all of that, you know, again, we're all in this together, and you know, to participate in dreaming the desirable world into being. Because we spoke backstage about, you know, this opportunity for Neptune, Quintellison, Solway Coagula, dissolve and reimagine. And for all of us, you know, and I'll turn it to you, you know, but to dissolve cruelty and dominance out of the human repertoire, right? So that Dementors go, wait a minute, where's cruelty and dominance? I know I put it down somewhere. I can't find it. And it's like, because it's gone. I think small, huge, miraculous, desirable visualizations are effective. So dissolving cruelty and dominance in ourselves, you will take it back there, right? It's like in ourselves and the world. Is that where you go?
Caroline, every soul has its own lake of consciousness, right? And we sit in that when we know we're in it, we know it. And when we're not, we know we're in something else. So I don't know how to answer that question. I think that's a whole show in and of itself, just that.
Okay, well, we'll just wonder about it, let's give ourselves more metaphoric props, because when I said Saturn in the sky right now, and it quintiles, okay. Uranus and Mercury's exactly opposite your Mercury, you wise rascal. But the image for Saturn, for all of us, is a girl with a bugle calling in a new tide of cultural energy. So everybody, you know, whenever, you know, and it's always a good idea, but it says now it's especially effective. And stories, Jupiter says, the first question about stories is not, is it true? Jupiter says, never mind that. Can you ride it? It's like, oh, I can ride that story. Mm-hmm. And it's like, ride it and see what happens, right? So everybody's got a trumpet. You know, again, to call in, to open the doorway, to invite what is needed, you know, in micro circumstance and macro. And I'm very appreciative of your mahooting us, your mentoring us, right, that it's always in ourselves in order to metabolize the poison in the world.
I have an answer for you, perhaps.
Okay.
I wonder if this might work. If this is relatable for folks here. How about the idea that our life achieves its perfect and ultimate purpose when we are our own excellence, whatever that is. And if you're having a grief situation, then be excellent. In your grief. I do it that way. That's the service of mine, that I could get away from the bondage of myself and just see a bigger picture of that. To say that when my beloved familiar Zena dropped her body, that it wasn't more painful for her than it was for me. So you see, I try to work with that question you asked, just in the most simple, basic way. With each thought and each emotion, is a kind of prayer. It's a kind of sacrament. So for me, I just lean in that direction. I don't ever get there. I just lean into that.
Well, again, democratic animism, the community of all beings, and when beloved Stella Coyote, my longest term companion, Actual Coyote, was dying, we gazed into each other's eyes, you know, and I was like, oh, she's gonna miss me as much as I miss her.
Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And then just to honor and toss back to you, you know, the patterns of now, we are pattern tracking beings, and the effectiveness of that to which you're dedicated. So Saturn at 7 degrees of Pisces, all of us with a bugle calling in a new tide of cultural energy, with a quirky angle to Mars at 7 degrees of Leo. It's the Pisces-Leo conversation. It's not Leo performance show-offness. It's deep, dedicated magic and ritual. And Mars's image is a community activist spreading their ideals. And we go, right, well, here we are, visionary activism. You know, I'm sort of stuck with the title for 26 years, but it'll do, because it is the wedding of the deep inner work and dedication to outward community effectiveness.
Yes.
So that's one beautiful quintile. And what I said to you also backstage before we began, I go, the sun is in Gemini at 11 Gemini, and the moon is at 11 Scorpio. Right, so that's an interesting conversation as well, to give conversational accessibility, Gemini, to deep, spicy things. And we go, that's fun. And that's, you know, that's something that you love to do too, right?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thinking of actually, I'm just mesmerized by something you said earlier about the morning of forests, and I'm just thinking that what you've just mentioned, just for me, this is about grief, you know, that if it's in direct proportion to the love that these people have shared with their forest, somehow or another, if we could somehow or another pray it up, that it wouldn't be just loss, it could be a reawakening of their connection to the land and their culture or something. I don't know what I'm speaking from white privilege, so let's put a filter on that. But
my deep democratic
soul believes that we can all work together on levels that the actual community level, but on so many other levels as well. So I'm going to dedicate myself to working on that, warning that forest. Thank you,
Caroline.
And
you're and And your forest and the Appalachia forest and the forest of the redwoods, yes, and the forests everywhere, yes, and our, yes, the work of wonderful John Perlin, you know, a guest twice now on his great book, A Forest Journey, you know, forests and the fate of human civilization, great book. But yes, in this article, you know, it says, mourning has become a crucial disposition. It allows us to acknowledge, grieve loss, but also to create, revive connections with our, yeah, more than human others, right? Their grief as well. We're all in this together. And it goes on, you know, powerfully, beautifully. And the people, you know, smoothing down the tire tracks that have ravaged and taken, you know, and killed all the plants and the animals to plant palm oil. But they're smoothing it so the earth can heal, so they can cooperate with the earth healing. So we're in our last moments here, but this is a good part one, Janet Inglis. I'm glad we're reconnecting from the burning guts and the charnel whatever and the honoring of death as so great. Do you have a short woof, a 30-second woof, or something you'd like us to animate for you, or?
Let's see. If you all can imagine, I'd sure love if you could contact Caroline on her website, and if you've got some really great, wherever you are, prisons, because I have a vision of doing a Chud prison tour to the very, very grief-stricken souls that,
yes,
have been ignored and vilified. But just that's the last little, yeah, that's, it's just always on my mind, mm-hmm, where I can do Chud. But wonderful to be here with you, part one. Thank you.
Yes, it's wonderful. Yeah, that's really super great. That's super great. Wonderful, wonderful. You know, and we didn't need as many rutabagas as we thought. that's super adorable. That's an inside joke, but really cute. So this is our part one. And again, everyone just taking into heart the beauty of grief and the beauty of Chud and metabolizing poison within ourselves in order to metabolize poison in the world. Thank you. Thank you, Janet Inglis. Thank you so much. Thank you always, Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com. And you can find a Visionary Activist Show on Patreon. And we will reconvene next week. Woof, woof, woof. Thank you.